Okay, if you want to get your Bibles, I know the screen says Matthew chapter 6, and that's where we will be today, but we did not finish Matthew chapter 5 last week, and so I want to back up and just complete Matthew chapter 5 since we were negligent in having enough time to get that done, and I guess I'll put the blame on me for that. It'd probably be unfair to blame you that we didn't finish what we needed to finish last week, so... In Matthew chapter 5, here's the outline that we're trying to just walk through as we go through this particular class, looking as Jesus does, that the Christian life is not just about what you do on the outside. The Christian life is what you do on the outside coupled with what your heart looks like on the inside. And that was the trouble that the Pharisees were having as they lived a life that was focused on the outward, on the external. And that's where their focus was. But Jesus says, okay, you've got to be right on the outside, but if your righteousness doesn't exceed that, then you're not going to go to heaven. So Matthew chapter 5 and verse 20, we have mentioned this verse several times. It is not the only key verse in this sermon, but it is a key verse in this sermon, because as you walk through what Jesus is saying, he starts off by talking about the fact that you've got to be living the right kind of life. In order to live the right kind of life, you've got to be right with God. And in order to be right with God, you've got to make sure that your heart is right with Him. And the trouble with the Pharisees, as you look in chapter 5 and verse 20, the trouble with them is that their righteousness was merely external. They had elevated their own traditions above the law of God. They had neglected some of the matters of the law in order to uphold their own traditions and their own opinions. Is that ever a good idea? Ever a good idea to say, well, you know, I know that's what the law says, I know that's what God says, but here's what I think about it. Here's what I believe about it. Anytime we go down that road, we're no different than the Pharisees. Here they were saying, well, we respect the law, but we respect our traditions more. Well, that's not going to draw you closer to God. That's going to drive you further away from Him. And so, when Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5, verse 20, that your righteousness must exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, it's not like it's a contest. It's not like you're looking at these people that, you know, the Jews considered the Pharisees to be righteous, to be the premier level of Jewish commitment. And Jesus says, yeah, that's not the standard. Your righteousness must exceed theirs by focusing on making sure that your heart is right. And so, what he deals with is six contrasts, and we've got to get to this last one that we didn't finish last week. But he deals with six contrasts, not just contrast of the law and the New Testament gospel. That was not the contrast. Contrast was what the Pharisees and the scribes had done to the law, what they were doing with their traditions, and what Jesus wants them to understand about how to serve God. And so you see throughout this, how does Jesus... You see the pattern that he uses, verse 21, you've heard this, verse 22, but I say to you. Verse 27, you've heard this, but verse 28, but I say to you. And so you've got that pattern over and over where Jesus is exalting his authority to be able to speak on these things. And so he dealt with the matter of murder and hate, that people would, is it wrong to murder? Of course it is, but it's just as wrong to hate in your heart. He dealt with adultery, he dealt with divorce, he dealt, and starting in verse 33, with the matter of oaths and making sure that our word is truly our bond, as we might say today, that we can be trusted. Even if you don't say, well, have you ever been in a conversation with somebody and through the course of the conversation, then they'll say, well, let me tell you the truth about this. Well, what have you been telling me up to this point then? You know, but it's like we've got to put in this little extra phrase here. We ought to be telling the truth without even saying, let me tell you the truth about this, or without saying, you know, I swear on this, or I swear. It's not about, Jesus says, just tell the truth. Let your yes be yes. Verse 38 and following, he deals with the matter of retaliation, making sure that's not a part of who we are. And he dealt with a variety of situations five different situations that we might deal with. But you get down to verse 43, and this is where we need to pick up today. Finish this section of chapter 5, and then get into the first part of chapter 6. And that is, how do you deal with your enemies? We had a question, was it last week or the week before? I think it was the week before last when we were dealing with some of these matters. And the question was, is Jesus talking in this section about your brother, a fellow Christian, or is he talking about just anybody? And in some of this, particularly back up in verses 21 and following, Jesus is particularly talking about your brother, particularly talking about someone who is a fellow Christian. But you get down to verses 43 and following, and he's not talking about your brother anymore. He's not talking about simply a fellow Christian. He is talking about even your enemies. Now, don't want to ask this question, but is it possible that a brother in Christ could even be your enemy? Just think about that. But what does he say in verse 43? You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. Well, what verse in the Old Testament says that? What verse in the Old Testament says, love your neighbor and hate your enemy? Well, no verse in the Old Testament says it. So remember, as we go through these six contrasts here, it's not Jesus saying, well, here's what the old law said, now here's what I'm saying. And I think we've had that idea sometimes, is this is where Jesus is really differentiating himself from the law. No, he's differentiating himself from what they had done to the law. And he says, okay, you've heard that it has been said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. Well, the Old Testament did say, love your neighbor, didn't it? That's not just New Testament law, that's Old Testament law. Love your neighbor. Well, but what had the Jewish elite done with that? Well, you should love your neighbor, but, you don't have to love your enemy. In fact, it's okay if you don't have anything to do with your enemy. And Jesus says that's not the case. And so what the Jews had done is the Jews had redefined neighbor and had defined neighbor in a very limited capacity, in a very narrow capacity. Oh, well, only this group of people is my neighbor. Do you remember what parable Jesus told where he got to the end and he said, who was neighbor to this man? Remember what parable that was? Parable of the Good Samaritan. Jesus tells a whole parable to define for these Jews and for us who our neighbor is. Our neighbor is not just some well-meaning Jew or some Jew that we like or even a Jew. Jesus wanted them to understand a neighbor is everybody that you meet, everybody that you come across. And so when God says, love your neighbor, who does that include? Well, that includes everybody. But not your enemy, right? I mean, let's be real. You're not going to love your enemy. What does verse 44 say? But I say to you, love your enemies. That's easy, right? We can skip right over that, get down to some harder things to discuss. What does it mean to love your enemies? How do you love your enemies? Okay, that's what the word means. You are looking out for their best interests. The word that's used here for love is that Greek word agape. Akabaho is the verb, but it's agape love, which is a love that is not based upon sentiment. It's a love that's not based upon emotions. It is a love of the will. It is a love that you decide, that you're going to have for someone, that you determine, I am going to put their interests even above my own. I'm going to look out for what is best for them. Now, that's not easy. But what if God had told you to have warm, fuzzy feelings and great affection and friendship and admiration for your enemies? What if he told you to do that? Okay, I'm going to tap out on this one. I don't think I can do that, God. But that's not what he's saying. He's using the word agape, which is a matter of unconditional, doesn't matter who you are, unselfish, doesn't matter what I get out of it, seeking to put somebody else's needs above my own and even sacrifice something of my own in order to accomplish that. Now, is that easy? Well, of course, that's not easy, but that's what Jesus is telling us to do. How are we going to get the gospel to people that we don't like, that are not our friends, that we don't have great affection for? How are we going to get the gospel to them if we don't want what's best for them? We're supposed to go into all the world and preach the gospel to who? Just our friends, people who are nice to us, people that give us money. We're to preach the gospel to everybody. Well, that's what's looking out for their best interest. So what does Jesus say? But I say to you, love your enemies. Now, notice that Jesus does this on a number of occasions. Go over to Luke chapter 6. And again, there's a lot of parallels between the sermon in Matthew 5, 6, and 7, and the sermon that Jesus preaches in Matthew chapter 6. There's a lot of parallels. It's not the same sermon, although you have some similarities. Look over in Luke chapter 6, where there's I think, even greater detail than what Jesus gives in Matthew chapter 5. Luke chapter 6 and verse 27. Luke 6, 27. But I say to you who hear, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. If God didn't give us any other commands in the whole Bible, would we spend the rest of our life trying just to fulfill that? Would that be difficult? Just do good to those who hate you. What about people who curse you in verse 28? Bless those who curse you. That's not easy. Pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. And then you see him saying some of the similar things, what we saw earlier in chapter 5 about somebody striking you on the cheek or taking away your cloak. Go down to verse 32. We're going to see this back in Matthew chapter 5. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love. Anybody loves. If somebody comes along and gives you, a box of freshly made chocolate chip cookies, are you going to be mad at them? If you're allergic, I guess, but I'm sorry if you're allergic. If somebody comes to your door and brings a fresh-made chicken pot pie, are you going to be like, get out of my face? When somebody does nice to you, are you more inclined to do nice to them? Well, yeah, that's kind of the natural reaction. Jesus says, big deal. Somebody does nice to you and you do nice to them, big deal. He says, everybody does that, but how are you to set yourself apart? Verse 33, and if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. If you lend to those, verse 34, and if you lend to those from whom you hope to receive back, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners to receive as much back. But love your enemies, verse 35, do good and lend, hoping for nothing in return. Is that hard? Hoping for nothing in return? No pat on the back, no credit, no thank. No, they didn't even send me a thank you card. God didn't tell you to expect a thank you card. Well, they didn't even. No. We do good without expecting anybody to do anything. Well, I just don't know if I can go back to that church because I did so much for them and they never did anything for me. Wrong attitude. It's not about what I get. And that's what Jesus is saying, hoping for nothing in return. And your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High. For he, who's he talking about? Who's the Most High? God in heaven. God is kind to the who? The unthankful and evil. Well, they never said thank you to me. How many people say thank you to God? And what does he keep doing? He keeps showing kindness. Therefore, I want to tie this in with the last verse of Matthew chapter 5, but what does he say in verse 36? Therefore, be merciful, just as your Father is also merciful. So, come back to Matthew chapter 5, and again, there's a lot of parallels here between Matthew chapter 5 and Luke chapter 6. But when Jesus tells us to love our enemies, this isn't optional. But he gives us some information about, here's people who hate you, do good to them. Here are people that curse you, then bless them, speak good of them, speak good to them. God recognizes that and then he says, pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. Is it easy to pray? Maybe you have found a way to make this easy, I don't know. Is it easy to pray for somebody and hate them at the same time? Is it easy to talk to God about somebody? Now, it depends on how you're talking to God, I guess, right? Dear God, please smite this person with your right hand and then kick him in the teeth. In Jesus' name, amen. I mean, okay, if you're praying that, I don't think that's what Jesus has in mind here. But if you're praying, God, please help me with this person. Please help me to be patient. Please help me to have kind words for them. Please help me to look out for their best interest. What if we're praying that to God? What if we're praying for them? God, they're going through a hard time. They deserve it. No, God, they're going through a hard time. Please be with them. Please help this to soften their hearts so maybe I can do some good unto them. We think about prayer changing God's mind about things. We're praying and we're telling God what we want. You know what prayer does more than change God? It changes you. Pray for those who despitefully use you and persecute you. Why? Matthew 5 and verse 45. Why? Do you see the word that? Beginning in verse 45, that's the first word I've got in verse 45. That, here's the reason you do this. That you may be the sons of your Father in heaven. The word sons of, where there is not just talking about a descendant or a child of, it's talking about having the characteristics of. You read about other people being like the son of perdition or the son of disobedience in other places in the New Testament. It's not talking about being a descendant. It's talking about you have the qualities, you have the characteristics. If you love those who are your enemies, guess what? You've got the characteristics of God. And I want you to notice through the Sermon on the Mount how often Jesus emphasizes your Father in heaven. That's throughout, and we'll try to notice several of those today. But he says, you're going to be just like your Father in heaven, because what does he do? He makes his son, that son doesn't belong to anybody else but God. He makes his son to rise on the evil and the good. If you were God, would you do that? He sends his rain on the just and the unjust. If you were God, would you do that? If somebody did you wrong, would you maybe hold back some of your blessings of the sun and the rain? And then these questions in verse 46, just like we saw in Luke chapter 6. If you love those who love you, what reward is that to you? If you don't the tax collectors do the same? If you greet your brethren only, and the word greet there is not just talking about you say hello to them. That's involved, but the word greet here was used for you're desiring what is best for somebody. He says, if you only do that for your brethren, what difference does that make? What do you do that others don't? Don't even the sinners and the tax collectors do the same? Verse 48 trips some people up, and that's why I wanted to look in Luke chapter 6. Therefore you shall be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect. Notice again the emphasis on your Father in heaven. But what does this mean, you shall be perfect? I can't be perfect. I'm complete. Is God perfect? Well, of course God's perfect. But did you see the parallel that we had over in Luke 6 and verse 36? Be merciful, even as your heavenly Father is merciful. Are there other verses in the Bible that tell us to be holy, even as I am holy? Are we to imitate Paul as even he imitates Christ? Obviously, we're not God. Obviously, we are not perfect from the standpoint of having no flaws and having no sins at all. But the more I behave like God instead of behaving like the devil, the more I become like God. The more mature I become in my Christian walk, in my Christian faith. Shouldn't that be my goal? And instead of focusing in on treating others the way they treat me, seems like this sermon, is this the sermon where we're going to read about something about that golden rule about how you treat others? Instead of treating others the way they treat me or seeing, well, they did this to me, let me see how much I can repay them for what they've done. No, that's not becoming like God, that's becoming like the devil. And so if we're going to become like our God, we've got to love our enemies and do good to people who even do us wrong, seeking what's best in their highest interest. Anybody got any thoughts or comments before we get to chapter 6? Thoughts, comments, remarks you want to make about this section on loving your enemies? It's a challenging section. I mean, we can read through this. We can talk about it. but to actually put this into practice. Inside this room is probably easy to put that into practice. But when you leave here, that's difficult. John? Yep. That's the point that Jesus is making. That, you put yourself in that person's position. You don't want to be hated, as John is saying. You don't want to be hated, and so why would we hate somebody else? But when you return good for evil, when you return love for hate, does that catch people off guard? Does that make them stagger a bit and say, wait a minute, you're not, stop being nice to me. What are we doing in return? We're seeking their highest interest. Is it possible that hopefully we can have a positive influence on them, a saving influence on them by the way that we respond to how we are treated? So many things we could talk about there, so many applications. Mickey, go ahead. Right. Yep. So Proverbs chapter 15 verse 1 says a soft answer turns away wrath. We need to be those who would return that soft answer and try to allay the strife that is there. And that's Jesus says, blessed are the peacemakers. That needs to be us. Striving to create and make peace wherever we can. Not obviously, we're not talking about compromising any truth or any godly principles. That's not involved here. But challenging, right? Sam? Correct. Yep. And that's what we saw in chapter 5, is that we've got to let our light shine. And that light is the way that we're living. And how we're treating each other, when we return good for evil, that's letting our light shine before men. Adeline? Yeah, well, that's part of it, is we've got to be merciful, just as we saw in Luke 6 and verse 36. What does it mean to be merciful? There's a number of ways to define that. You look at the parable of the Good Samaritan, and when Jesus asked... You remember when Jesus asked the question, who was neighbor? Who was neighbor to this man? There was the Levite, there was the priest, and then there was the Samaritan that went by. And when he said, who was neighbor to this man? He couldn't even bring himself to say the word Samaritan. He couldn't even utter the word Samaritan out of this Jewish leader. Couldn't even utter the words. So he just said, the one who showed mercy. Well, isn't that what the Good Samaritan did? The Good Samaritan showed mercy. Was he obligated to stop and help the guy? I mean, was he obligated to put the man on his beast of burden and carry him into the inn? Was he obligated to bind and care for his wounds? Was he obligated to give money to the innkeeper? Is that going the extra mile between two individuals, a Jew and a Samaritan? Who, remember John 4 and verse 4? Or John 4 and verse 9, they don't have any dealings with each other. But to go the extra mile, it's that pity, it's that compassion that we have, even if the other person, listen, even if the other person doesn't deserve it. That's what mercy is. Has God given us things that we don't deserve when we deserve something else? Yeah, that's involved there. So look in chapter 6. And again, I think there's a tendency, maybe this idea that we compartmentalize certain parts of Sermon on the Mount, say, okay, now we're in chapter 6, so this is different from what this isn't different. And it's not, just ignore the chapter division for one, but recognize that there's a whole flow of thought that Jesus has in this sermon. As we've been dealing with that your righteousness must exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, that's not just limited to chapter 5. You're going to see that continued here in chapter 6, but he's going to focus in on what's our real motivation? What's our real motivation for doing things? What's your motivation for being a Christian? What's your motivation for the things that you do as a Christian? So in verse 1 is kind of an introduction to these next several verses. It's kind of a general warning, as it were, to where he's going to talk about giving and praying and fasting, three main elements of a religious life. But verse 1 kind of introduces that concept where he says, "Take heed that you do not do your charitable deeds," the New King James says. Other translations might have not practicing your righteousness, which maybe is a better concept here. Take heed that you don't practice your righteousness before men. Well, why would you do that? In order to be seen by them. That was the trouble that the Pharisees had. The Pharisees lived in such a way that they wanted glory, they wanted attention, they wanted accolades, they wanted other people to see what they were doing in their service to God. And in so doing, it revealed their motivation. If you're just wanting people to see you, okay, we're getting a glimpse into your heart, and we're seeing what your motives are. And so what does Jesus say at the end of verse 1? "Otherwise, you have no reward from your Father in heaven." Again, the emphasis on your Father in heaven. But if you are seeking the attention of men as you go out and do these things for God, as you say, you have no reward from your Father. Now, that idea of reward, Jesus is going to come back to that throughout these next several verses, talking about this matter of reward. Let me ask you a question. Do you want a reward from your Father in heaven? Back in chapter 5 and verse 12, we had this idea of reward. Back in chapter 5 and verse 12 is where he talked about rejoice. Even when you're under persecution, rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. Even when you're being mistreated, to do right unto others, and you'll have reward in heaven. And so those are the two options that Jesus is presenting. You can either have one reward where you get attention and congratulations and approval of man, or you can have another reward where you get the attention and the approval of God. Which one do you want? He says you can't strive for both. He says you've got to focus on which one of those you want. And so beginning in verses 2, 3, and 4, he's going to deal with this matter of giving. Your Bible might talk about almsgiving, or it might talk about this idea of just doing good. But look at what he says. "Therefore," verse 2, "when you do a charitable deed," when you do a nice thing for someone else, or when you give, maybe you have given to somebody, you have provided for their needs in some way, "do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets." Jesus used the word hypocrites a lot. Is it nice to call somebody a hypocrite? Have you ever been called a hypocrite? Did that bother you when somebody called you a hypocrite? I suspect Jesus is one who could call somebody a hypocrite better than we can, because Jesus could see what we can't see. What's a hypocrite? Hypocrite is somebody that's different on the outside than they are on the inside. Well, we can usually do pretty good at telling the difference, but Jesus could definitely tell the difference. He could definitely tell the difference between somebody who was just pretending, putting on a good show on the outside, but on the inside they were a very different person. You know, we talk about, you know, they say one thing and do another kind of thing. So Jesus talks about the Pharisees being hypocrites. Hypocrites in their giving. How can you be a hypocrite in your giving? I mean, if you're giving, isn't that a good thing to do? And in fact, if you're giving, who cares if you're a hypocrite, right? I mean, if you're giving, great, bring on the money. Bring on the goods. If you're giving, we don't care, you know, about your heart. What does Jesus say? If you're doing good, if you're doing a charitable deed, if you're giving, don't be a hypocrite. Don't be like the Pharisees. Well, what was one thing that they would do? And whether he's talking literal or figurative here in verse 2, it could be both. He says, "Do not sound a trumpet before you." Do not sound a trumpet before you. What does that involve? attention. It involves drawing attention. Now, it could be that some of them were literally doing that. There have been some who've researched this and found that at certain times of giving back in Palestine, they would sound the trumpet to announce that there was a certain time of giving that had arrived. And certainly that could be involved here. Maybe these guys were literally blowing a trumpet. I'm not sure if that's what was involved. So whether he's talking literal or figurative, he's saying, why do you want to draw attention to the fact that you're giving? One thing that was interesting, if you went into the temple complex, there were various courts around. You've got the main temple itself, the building itself, the holy place, the most holy place building. But outside of that, there were various courtyards where certain people could go. You've got the court of the Gentiles, and Gentiles could be there, but they couldn't go any further beyond that court. Beyond the court of the Gentiles, there was the court of women. And inside the court of women, there was one place that was called the treasury, inside of the court of women around the temple. In the treasury is where we read in Luke chapter 21, where Jesus saw the widow and her two mites. Remember the story of the widow and her two mites? She came into the treasury to give her two mites. Well, there were a bunch of rich people who were there too. When you went into the treasury, where they gave, I love, love, love the fact that we have baskets that we use for our contribution. Can you imagine if we used something that was made of metal that didn't have anything soft in the bottom? Imagine if we just used a metal bowl. And we just brought in a metal bowl without anything soft on the bottom. And just imagine now, I mean, today most of us are dropping maybe some piece of paper or something, but back then they weren't dropping any kind of piece of paper. Back then you walked into the treasury and where they placed their money, the containers looked like inverted trumpets, okay? So get the picture. You've got an inverted trumpet. So up at the top you have this wide-mouthed piece of metal of brass, and it kind of funnels its way down to where the money would be collected. Well, they're not giving paper back there, and they're giving coins. And so if you walk in and you're rich and you're going to give a lot this day in the treasury, and you walk in and you got this piece of brass and you're going to, would you just gently kind of take your money and just kind of gently put it over there and just slide it on? So it didn't, no. So I don't know if that's what Jesus has in mind here, because what would those guys do? They do what your kids would do, right? Your kids get that jar of money and they just dump it out as high, bang, dang, 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 and making all this racket. Well, what? Oh, did you hear that? Wow, that person really gave a lot. I mean, did you hear all of that noise? And this widow walks over and nothing. Too little mite. Too bad. This other guy over here dumping out. Oh, listen to that guy. Wow. What does Jesus say? What does Jesus say about the widow? She gave what? She gave more than the other guys did because she gave all her livelihood. Wait a minute, she didn't give more. Jesus says she gave more. What's the deal? Not about the amount, it's about the heart. And that's where he is here. Don't sound a trumpet. Don't draw attention to yourself. Don't make it about you, because if it's about you, then you're not giving the way God wants you to give. You're being a hypocrite. And so in the synagogues, verse 2, and in the streets, that's what they would do. They draw attention to themselves. Why? You see the word that in verse 2? That. Here's their reason. That they may have glory from man. That's what they wanted. Jesus says at the end of verse 2, assuredly I say to you, they have their reward. They have their reward was an accounting term back then. And that accounting term was a term that involved paid in full. So if you got an invoice, and you paid that invoice, have you ever had somebody put a stamp on an invoice or some kind of receipt that you got, put it paid in full? And that's what this was. Jesus says, if what you want is glory for man, if you want attention from man, and oh, look at me and all I'm giving, Jesus says, good job. You've been paid in full. You've got full payment for what you were seeking. Now, is that what we want? Is it just that we want attention from others and that pat on the back and we want that thank you card in the mail for what we've done? Jesus says, don't toot your own horn when you're giving. Don't make it about you, because if that's what you want, okay, you're going to be paid in full. Verse 3, But when you do your charitable deed, when you do good, don't even let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. What does that mean? You be as discreet as possible. Don't draw attention to yourself and what you're doing. The point is, the other people should not even know that it's you giving, let alone your right hand know that your left hand, what your left hand is giving. If we want people to know what we have done, how much we have given, Jesus says your focus is in the wrong place. So he says, when you do your charitable deed, don't even let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Verse 4, that your charitable deed may be in secret. Oh, not in secret, then nobody knows. What does he say in verse 4? Your Father knows. If nobody else knows, good. Your Father, who sees in secret, will reward you. Which reward are we looking for? Are we looking for the reward from man, the attention from man, the accolades of man, or are we looking for the reward of our God? Now, should we expect that to be material? No, I don't believe so. Are the best rewards that God can give us material rewards? No. Can God give you a joy and a satisfaction of serving Him that is something that cannot be explained, that is something that is beyond something that we can even comprehend? Are there spiritual blessings that the Lord can pour out on us that maybe we don't even realize we have at the moment? That's what we ought to seek. When we're doing unto others, God says, don't seek the attention, don't seek the credit for it. If you seek the credit, you're no different than anybody else in that regard. Your attention ought to be on seeking God's approval. And let God see you doing this, and God will take care of you. Let me spend about 4 minutes on prayer, and we're going to have to back up and finish this section next week because 4 minutes is not enough to deal with these verses. When you pray, remember, Jesus is dealing with three things here. Look in verse 2. Therefore, when you do a charitable deed. Look in verse 5. When you pray. Look in verse 16. When you fast. So there's the three things, and he starts them with that. When you do this, when you do this, when you do this. So that's how he begins these three sections. So in verse 5, when you pray, notice he doesn't say if you pray. He's saying when you do it, which means you better be doing it. When you pray, don't be like the hypocrites. Well, wait a minute. If somebody's praying, good job. You know, who cares what their hearts? Wait a minute. Can you be a hypocrite even when you're praying? Prayer, if it's done right, involves sincerity in verse 5. Don't be like the hypocrites because they pray standing in the synagogues. Now, Jesus isn't knocking them for their posture. Standing was a common posture for prayer, so that's okay. But they're standing in the synagogues and on the streets. You see the word that? What's their purpose? That they may be seen by men. You remember the Jews had their hours of prayer. They would have the hour of prayer in the morning at 9 o'clock. They would have their hour of prayer in the afternoon at 3 o'clock. And Jews would pray three times a day, so they would pray at 9 o'clock, at noon, and at 3 o'clock. So remember when Acts 3, when Peter and John were going to the temple at the hour of prayer. So the Jews had fixed hours of prayer. So the Pharisees came up with the great idea. You know, the hour of prayer is at fixed time right here. I could be walking along in the street and all of a sudden the hour of prayer comes. But I'm just out in the street. Well, what am I going to do out here on the street? It's the hour of prayer. I'm going to pray to God, right? So when you read this, that they're praying out in the streets, they would intentionally be, if they were wearing your watch, they'd be intentionally watching. And, oh, look, I just happen to be out here on the street. But the hour of prayer has come, and so what must I do? I must pray. And so they would go into their great show of prayer. Is Jesus condemning public prayers? No, not condemning public. Did Jesus ever pray in public? Yes, he did. Did Jesus ever pray in public before a meal? Yes, he did. So is it okay for us to pray in public before a meal? Yes, that's not the point here. The point is, what are they doing? Drawing attention to themselves. So if you would pray in public before a meal, but you stand up before the whole restaurant and say, "Hey, can I have everybody's attention? My family and I are going to pray over here, and I noticed that none of the rest of you prayed for your food, so we're just going to go ahead and pray for your food while we're praying for our food." Is that a good idea? No. Praying in public, good idea. Praying in public to draw attention to yourself, bad idea. And so that's what Jesus is dealing with, is that they may be seen of men. Surely I say to you, what does he say at the end of verse 5? They've been paid in full. They've got their reward. If all they want is attention from man, they got it. They got what they wanted. And when you pray, let me get through verse 6, and then we're going to have to stop. When you pray, go into your room, solitude. Don't be out there where you get all the attention. Go into your room. When you've shut your door, pray to who? Your Father who is in the secret place. Who is our prayer directed to? It's always directed to the Father. Pray to your Father. And your Father who sees and sees. No, but nobody's going to know that I'm praying. That's not the point. Your Father knows that you're praying. You direct your prayer to Him, not to self. Remember the Pharisee in Luke chapter 18? Luke chapter 18, Jesus told a parable. It's about the tax collector and the Pharisee. And the Pharisee got there and he prayed in the temple, and it says he thus prayed with himself. If that's the extent of our prayers, they're not making it to our Father in heaven. We ought to pray to our Father in heaven, remembering that He loves us, remembering that He is ready to hear us, ready to answer us, and not be one who would want to seek attention. It's not about dismissing that we ought to pray in public. He's not even dismissing that our prayers should not even be long in these next verses. It's saying you need to make sure that your heart is right and in the right place as you talk to your God. We only got through verse 6. We needed to get through verse 15. That didn't happen today. So we're going to back up next week, and we will make some more progress. We got to get through verse 24 next week. So thank you all very much for your good attention this morning.